Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of In the Money, where we break down trading strategies and share actionable ideas for all traders. My name is Andrew McGowan, part of the trading strategy desk here at Fidelity. Many of you may recognize me from the In the Money follow-up session that we run on Fridays with the trading strategy desk. I'm very excited to be joining for the main broadcast this week. With me today, as always, is Tony Zhang, Chief Strategy Officer and co-founder of Options Play. Tony, it's been an interesting week since last Thursday. Glad to have you back on. How have you been?
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Yeah, as you said, there's been a pretty big shift in terms of sentiment this week. So really looking forward to breaking that down today.
Wonderful. Well, today is Thursday, October 24th. And as I mentioned, we have seen some very interesting developments in the markets after a few days of consolidation. I know many traders and investors are doing their best to manage risk through this dynamic market environment. So with that being said, Tony, what are your current macroeconomic views? What developments are you watching this week?
Yeah, thank you so much, Andrew. Like you said, you know, this week, we actually entered this week on a fairly optimistic tone here for equities. You know, we had earnings season that was coming in stronger than expected. The bar was set pretty low, so expectations were for a good percentage of companies to beat both on top and bottom line. You had the S&P 500 printing new all-time highs back-to-back. You had oil prices falling, and things were looking pretty strong going into the week. But I think one of the things that started to temper momentum here this week was really some of the rhetoric we started to hear out of Fed officials earlier this week with regards to them reiterating their preferences for slower pace for rate cuts. You know, we've seen that both the 2-year and 10-year yields continue to climb here over the past couple of weeks. Both of them are now hovering well above 4% here. You know, this has kind of re-raised concerns around just, you know, corporate and government debt, the amount of debt loads that both, you know, corporations and the government is carrying here. And, you know, the potential increase in borrowing costs that is going to continue to be an issue here that we thought we were kind of behind a little bit because, you know, we saw the 10-year yield back around 3.6% just about a month ago. It was trending in the right direction. Now that borrowing costs are right back up, you know, this is raising some concerns with, you know, small caps. You know, we've seen small caps underperform here. If you look at a chart of IWM, we formed that double top and really failed to break out higher here in conjunction with the S&P 500. And this is creating a bit of a challenging environment for value stocks. You know, you have the S&P 500 hovering above that 5,800 level here to the upside. But if we break below that 5,800, that could lead to some further selling. And if you look at also the NASDAQ 100, it's struggled to reclaim all-time highs just like the NASDAQ, just like the Russell 2000. So, you know, when you have the Russell and the NASDAQ not confirming new highs and actually starting to show a little bit of weakness, you know, that all-time high in the S&P is starting to look a little bit more suspect. So what I really would like to see is the NASDAQ and the Russell reclaim all-time highs to confirm the all-time highs that we're seeing on the S&P in order to take a more bullish stance here in the markets. Because right now, higher interest rates are taking a bit of a toll here on the optimism from equities.
Absolutely. I appreciate the insights, Tony. And we've been looking at very similar things lately, it seems. As you mentioned, rates have been climbing and doing so coincidentally right after the Fed began its rate cut cycle, which is a good reminder that these treasury yields are still an output of buyers and sellers interacting in the market. It's not just only the Fed policy. On that note as well, like you mentioned, the technicals on these major indices have put us at a major inflection point in the market, especially combined with the existence of those divergences between the S&P 500 compared to its NASDAQ and Russell counterparts, as you had said. So that being said, I know you have two different trade ideas to discuss for us today. What's the first idea? How can we think prudently about the risk and reward opportunities?
Yeah, the first trade idea I want to stock that we've brought up a couple of times here throughout this year so far, and that's PayPal, because they've been undergoing a multi-year sort of transformation to their business since they spun off from eBay many years ago. And, you know, they've been focusing on things like building better user experiences for mobile users, focusing on small to medium businesses, building partnerships with big technology firms like Meta. And a lot of these transformation projects that they've been working on for the past few years are clearly starting to pay off here, and investors are paying attention. So if we look at a long-term chart here for PayPal, you see that over the past year or so, this stock has been bottoming or below that $70 level. And a couple of months ago, it finally broke out above that level, and it's now trading up to that $82 level here. It's consolidated a little bit since it's reached $80, and I think this is an opportunity again for long-term investors to look at this stock again. The upside targets that we have here is as PayPal not only breaks out above that $70 level, you have positive momentum and it's outperforming the S&P 500. I think you have an upside target around $100 here in the short run for PayPal. And then more importantly, if you look at the business, it's trading at about 17 times forward earnings, which is about a 20% discount relative to the average S&P 500 stock. And then you look at the underlying fundamentals. You have EPS growth that's expected about 14% over the next few years. That's well ahead of the average S&P 500 stock. Revenue growth of about 7%. That's roughly in line with the average S&P 500 stock. And net margins of 14%. So that's pretty efficient in terms of the business that they run. So if you think about the fact that it trades at a 20% discount, yet it grows either in line or slightly faster than the rest of the market, I think this is really where you have the potential upside, and it makes that $100 price target align both from the technical perspective with the fundamentals. So I think the best way to play this right now using options is to sell a cash secured put. Now, this is a long-term investment strategy for investors who believe in this particular stock in the long run, and allows you to potentially acquire these shares at a lower price. So I'm going out to the November expiration, and I'm selling the 77 and a half put options. Earlier today, you can sell that for about $2.30 in terms of a credit by selling that $77.50 put. And by doing that, what it obligates you to do is to buy 100 shares of PayPal if the stock is below the strike price of 77 and a half on November 15th, that expiration date. You do carry on the risks of owning 100 shares of that stock, which is the net price of around $75.20, but effectively allows you to potentially purchase this price back closer to the breakout level. So as I said on the technical chart, we broke out about $70. If this put option gets put to you, you'll own the stock just a slightly above $75. That's your total risk, about $7,500 for this particular trade. But that's only if the PayPal stock was to go down to zero. In exchange, what you're doing is you're collecting $2.30, which is about 3% of the stock's price. But you're doing that in just around 3 weeks' time. You're collecting 3% of the stock's value in 3 weeks' time. So if the stock stays above that $77.50 level by expiration, you effectively make a pretty significant yield on the cash that you're putting aside to potentially acquire these shares. And then at expiration, you can make the choice. If these put options expire worthless, you can look at selling more puts and collect more premium and potentially buy the stock at a later time. Or you can simply take the yield and move on to the next trade. So there's a few different ways that you can use this, but this is a way that you can potentially acquire the stock for a long-term investment at a discount utilizing options.
Excellent. To expand on that too, one piece of the thesis that I noticed on the chart itself that we can find very valuable is how we kind of approach momentum in a situation like this with respect to the trend. We'll notice on that RSI measure that we were using, it is showing that quote unquote overbought range on RSI, but often traders will see these extended levels of momentum and look to counter trend trades. But we often forget that the market and equities can sometimes cool down momentum-wise, but still appreciate in price. And this is an outlook that may fit with a cash secured put start trading style. In essence, it may benefit from bullishness, but it also may benefit from neutrality and mean reversion. And it creates a scenario where we could be purchasers of the shares at that strike price, as Tony mentioned. The one thing we don't want, however, is downside. So having a risk management plan in mind is a very necessary component of this trade, that, as we have mentioned. So I know we have another trade that we want to discuss. Tony, what is the second idea or the opportunity that we're looking at this week?
Yeah, the second trade I want to take a look at is a sector-based trade, and I want to take a look at the consumer staples sector. which have recently, for the past few months, have shown a little bit of outperformance here. But over the last month or so, that outperformance has slowly continued to erode. You know, as a sector, consumer staples continues to underperform the S&P 500. We saw a little bit of upside here, you know, during the earlier in the summer, but we continued to lose ground relative to the S&P 500. And then we recently this week saw some major earnings in this particular sector, both Coca-Cola and Procter Gamble. Even though they reported decent earnings, the markets reacted fairly negatively to both of those stocks, and I think it really has a lot to do with the valuations. But if we first look at a chart here, you have XLP that recently broke below $82, which is a resistance level that it recently just broke down below. And when you have a breakdown below a support level like that, and momentum turns negative, and it's starting to underperform the S&P 500, those are signs to me that the bullish trend that the XLP sector has been in for the past year or so is slowly potentially coming to an end, reversing potentially to a bearish trend. So the chart is starting to show us that investors are perhaps souring to this particular sector. And I think for a long time, this particular sector has been managed to pass on inflationary input cost onto the consumer. I think we're starting to see the limits of that to some degree. And I think there's some limited upside here and potentially some downside here for consumer staple stocks, as we saw with Coca-Cola and Procter Gamble earlier this week. And more importantly, I think the concern that I have here for the overall sector is really the valuations that they're trading at. If you look at XLP as a sector, it's trading at about 19 times forward earnings, which for a sector that's more defensive in nature, that's a relatively low margin, low growth sector, is on the higher end. You know, if you look at revenue growth for this particular sector, you know, we're looking at expecting revenue growth of less than 3% going out the next few years. That's not very much in terms of growth. Net margins are averaging just about 7%. That's well below the average S&P 500 stock. So from my perspective, trading at 19 times forward earnings, even though that's a slight discount relative to the average S&P 500 stock, for its sector, for its growth rate, and for its profitability, it's actually somewhat overvalued here at this point. And I think that's really what limits the potential upside here for the sector and actually just starts to generate some downside risks as well, especially as some of these names potentially underperform going into earnings season. So the trade structure that I want to use here is one where I'm taking a more neutral to bearish view here on XLP. This is a strategy that will be profitable if XLP just stays where it is, or if it moves lower in both scenarios. So I'm going out to the December expiration, and I'm selling the 82-85 call spread. And what that means is that I'm selling the $82 call option against buying the $85 call. And the reason I'm doing that is because if I just sold the $82 call option, that would give me my neutral to bearish outlook here for XLP. But that specific trade structure with the naked call option not only has unlimited risk, it also requires a substantial amount of margin in order to trade that. So one of the ways that I can offset the risk factor in this and at the same time significantly reduce the amount of margin that's required to sell that $82 call option is to simply buy a higher. What I'm doing here is I'm collecting $1.20 on this specific trade, but I'm reducing my overall risk to only $1.80. So my total risk is now only $180 per contract rather than unlimited. So that's a pretty significant change to the trade structure. And I always advocate when you have a neutral to bearish view, instead of just outright selling a call option, look at selling a call spread because that's going to give you the ability to take a risk profile very similar to selling a naked call option, but doing so in a way with very limited risk and very limited margin requirement that's required to get into the trade. So this is a trade that will break even at about 83, around 83.20. So this is a stock as long as the ETF stays below 83.20. And like I said, my resistance level is at 82. So my expectation is that it will stay below 82. But even if it breaks above 82 by a little bit, I can still be profitable in this particular trade. So it's the type of trade structure where you have a high probability of profit if XLP simply stays where it is or moves lower. And even in some instances where it moves a little bit higher, I can still be profitable. It's an extremely forgiving trade, and I think it's one that makes sense for the outlook that I have for XLP.
Absolutely. A lot of great things that you mentioned there. First and foremost, I want to point out that this is another example in which traders can truly combine a variety of different perspectives. We can combine fundamental perspectives, relative performance against a benchmark or even the market itself, along with technical indicators and pattern analysis. And on top of that, as Tony mentioned, it's a great example of defining the risk by using a second leg to protect us in the event that we are wrong. As mentioned earlier, this benefits from neutrality in the marketplace as well as directional components. But in the event that we are wrong, we have a defined risk and we are doing so in a capital efficient manner. So now that we've covered the two trade ideas for this week, it's time to review a trade idea from the last episode. These lookbacks have been very helpful for newer options traders because and allows them to see how the risk and reward opportunities have played out in the real world. So with that being said, Tony, which trade are we looking at this week?
Yeah, I wanted to give everyone an update on the Apple trade that we looked at last week. I laid out a neutral to bearish thesis on Apple last week when it was trading just above 230. We sold the 235-250 call spread on Apple, collecting about $4.65. Very similar, or the exact same trade structure as what we're doing here with XLP, but we're doing it on Apple. Now, the stock hasn't changed very much since we placed this trade, but what we did get this week was what should have been very positive data for Apple. We had both an announcement with regards to sales data out of China, and we got actually what was better than expected sales data for the iPhone 16. And we also got an update as far as what is going to actually be included in the first update of Apple's big AI release, which was their big reason for getting people to upgrade to the iPhone 16. And despite both positive news events coming out, the stock has not moved higher. It's actually moved a little bit lower. And what that really confirms for me is that the thesis that I had last week stays in place. So that despite all the good and optimistic news that have come out this week, the stock has not pushed higher. So that confirms my views. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to actually roll down my put spread. I'm going to buy back the November 29th, 235-250 call spread. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sell a new put spread, a call spread, the 230-245 call spread for the same November 29th expiration. What that's going to allow me to do is collect more credit. I'm going to collect another $1.58 by rolling it down to that 230-245 call spread. So I'm collecting more premium. I'm basically locking in some of my profits and still taking my bearish exposure here for Apple going forward to the same November 29th expiration. So I'm locking a little bit of profit, and that will allow me to take some risk off the table on this specific trade.
Excellent. That look back really demonstrates the power of active management and why it's important to have a clear outlook with respect to price, time, and volatility. Oftentimes, traders think for credit style strategies that we have to wait for expiration so that we can hopefully keep the entirety of the premium that we collected. But in that time since the trade on Apple, it has remained in a consolidation that has allowed us to reap the benefits of this trade so far. And if we continue to hold that outlook, then we can have that put into still have the time for a new trade. That being said, that brings us to a close for today's event. I want to thank all of our viewers for tuning in today. Don't forget to tune into the Straight Trading Strategy Desk's follow-up session hosted by myself tomorrow, Friday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can sign up for that class by going to fidelity.com/inthemoneyfollowup. We also offer a Fidelity Active Investor newsletter where we strive to provide meaningful and timely trading insights right to your inbox by going to fidelity.com/activeinvestorweekly. We're looking forward to seeing you all next week. Until then, take care, everyone.
Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or, if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Options trading entails significant risk and is not appropriate for all investors. Certain complex option strategies carry additional risk. Before trading options, contact Fidelity Investments by calling 800-544-5115 to receive a copy of Characteristics and Risks of Standardized Options. Supporting documentation for any claims, if applicable, will be furnished upon request. There are additional costs associated with option strategies that call for multiple purchases and sales of options such as spreads, straddles, and collars as compared with a single option trade. Technical analysis focuses on market action, specifically volume and price. Technical analysis is only one approach to analyzing stocks. When considering which stocks to buy or sell, you should use the approach that you are most comfortable with. As with all your investments, you must make your own determination as to whether an investment in any particular security or securities is right for you based on your investment objectives, risk tolerance, and financial situation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Greeks are mathematical calculations used to determine the effect of various factors on options. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at that time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of Options Play and are not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. News, commentary, market data, and research reports are from third-party sources unaffiliated with Fidelity, unless otherwise noted, and are provided for informational purposes only. Fidelity does not endorse or adopt third-party content. Fidelity makes no guarantee that the information supplied is accurate, complete, or timely, and does not provide any warranties regarding results obtained from their use.
Information provided in the podcast is general in nature, is provided for informational purposes only, and should not be construed as investment or tax advice. Fidelity Investments disclaims any liability for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information in this podcast. This podcast is intended for U.S. persons only and is not a solicitation for any Fidelity product or service. This podcast is provided for your personal non-commercial use and is the copyrighted work of FMR LLC. You may not reproduce this podcast in whole or in part in any form without the permission of FMR LLC.
Any screenshots, charts, or company trading symbols mentioned are provided for illustrative purposes only and should not be considered as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for the security. Options Play and Fidelity Investments are independent entities and are not legally affiliated. The third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.